Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
All right, Matt Smith in for Mike Evans. James got called away.
Yes.
By the, you know, I mean, he's a boss. So all the bosses getting together on Monday, you know, attacking the week. Right. James is one of those. So he couldn't join us for another segment. I know a lot of you out there very disappointed about that because I'm curious to know how he feels about the quarterback situation. I mean, look, I feel like we're in this holding pattern right now with the Broncos as we await the NFL draft, which is coming up in a couple of weeks here. They made a couple of moves. They brought in Throckmorton last week, another backup offensive lineman. Mm-hmm. They brought in another veteran center to compete. But I just come back to something you said a little bit earlier in the show. You're excited because they're finally approaching a rebuild here.
Right.
And we don't have to kind of twist your brain into a bit of a pretzel to see how you're going to make, you know, fill in the blank veteran quarterback work long term.
Right.
A Case Keenum, a Joe Flacco, how that's going to be the solution. I'm actually in the same boat with you. I'm as somebody who maybe isn't as emotionally invested as a lot of people are in the Broncos, I want to see them not be as incompetent as they have been the better part of the last decade. And to do that, in my honest opinion, you got to rebuild this thing. And you got to do it right. There's no shortcuts to it. You and I spoke about that a little on Friday. I think when you're going through a rebuild, it's something you got to approach with the right mentality that it's going to take as long as it's going to take.
Right. I think the other thing is you're not going to fix it simply by moving up and grabbing a quarterback out of college that is a potentially flawed quarterback and put that quarterback into a situation where he's not supported. The supporting cast is not very good. And, oh, by the way, you're going to get him beat to a pulp for the next couple of years because to do it, you've got to give up the rest of your draft capital. Like, that to me just doesn't, like, the more I see them doing their due diligence on these quarterbacks, doing the work, doing all that stuff, it's more, I don't know, maybe it's more of just an assurance that, yeah, we're right. There is nobody worth moving up for. Therefore, let's rebuild this thing the right way. Like, if you found that guy that you thought is just going to be the next Mahomes, the next whoever, then, yeah, let's move up. But let's eliminate prospects. Let's eliminate guys that we think, you know, let's like really do our work on them all to make sure we're right, that there isn't somebody in that top four that we have to go get.
I think the argument you would get from most people is that the right quarterback can be the tide that raises all boats. And the example that I've seen pointed out many times is the Houston Texans from last year. Look at what happened when they drafted C.J. Stroud. Yeah. Did anybody think? But my pushback to that would be, I feel like that's more of the outlier to the rule than the actual rule itself, the exception.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm 100% with you. And then when you look at what C.J. Stroud is and what he did, I think there's a lot of things, there's a lot of the intangible things that he came with that it's really hard to figure out if those guys have that. Mm-hmm. So he came with this undeniable passion, this unbelievable work ethic, this maturity that very few guys at that age have. And I'll be honest with you, you know, talking to the coaching staff, he was not very good early through mini camps and everything else. He was like he struggled. There were learning curves, but the thing about him is he's so detailed that he's not making the same mistakes twice. He's not, you know, falling victim to the same stuff. And he's a very, you know, mature, unselfish, protect the football at all costs, and trust the guys around me to make plays and trust that if we end up punting, that's a good thing. You know, and there's just a lot, like, there's a lot that he's not letting outside forces you know, and social media and everything else, he's not letting that affect him. And I think that's easy to talk about, really hard to do.
I just hope they don't get a little ahead of themselves here, trying to take a shortcut, because I don't think it lines up with the long-term right. philosophy of what it's going to take to get them back to success. And it doesn't mean I don't think that they're ever going to get anywhere without a quarterback. I'll be the first to acknowledge you're never actually going to enter that conversation until you have the guy. But the point is you got to be ready when he shows up.
Right.
It wasn't like Houston had done nothing. Houston had drafted some good young players. Now, I believe it's more the exception to the rule than anything, because they just so happened in the top 10 to draft the offensive rookie of the year and the defensive rookie of the year. Well, that doesn't happen. Yeah.
By the way, the other thing that happened with him that I think was this, that is a huge benefit that people don't talk about, is he was classically trained. So he wasn't a 7-on-7 kid. He wasn't like, he was under center in Pop Warner. He was under center in high school. He was under center, you know, a percentage of the time at Ohio State. So he was classically trained with the timing and the footwork of route combinations and when the ball is supposed to be delivered. Where most of the kids coming out of college football don't ever experience that. And so it's a foreign concept when you get into the NFL. And so now, is the league morphing into a lot more shotgun stuff? Absolutely. But what happens when all you do is 7-on-7 and shotgun your whole life, most guys have real lazy foot mechanics, and therefore they become really reliant on being sight throwers. Just see the guy open, throw it to the guy. And that's college football, where the NFL is anticipatory. You've got to be able to anticipate where guys are going to be, and you got to trust it and throw the ball on time and know the guy is going to come into that window.
What do the Broncos need to come away from this draft with? In the first year of a rebuild, because the way I see it, maybe they're not starting from square one, but they're starting from a place that's pretty damn close to square one, okay?
Right.
And they could take it wherever they wanted to go with it, wherever Sean feels like it needs to go. So I'm curious, are there any like boxes that they need to check for you coming out of the draft?
Yeah, I always think lines of scrimmage are important.
Sure.
I think you've got to build lines of scrimmage. I think defensively, I don't know that I would, the edge guys that I have, do I really think that those guys are going to be potential difference makers for the long term? Do I need a guy, you know, which we would call, or a three technique, a guy that we call a total war daddy, you know, a guy that every time you break the huddle, the offense breaks the huddle, you got to figure out, you know, how we're going to attack that guy. Like one corner, like one great corner takes away one receiver. One great D tackle or D end takes away all the receivers. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Because of the pass rush. So you've got to be able to figure that part out. And here's the great thing about this upcoming draft. And I really believe that if there isn't a quarterback that they feel like they need to move heaven and earth to go get, if that guy doesn't exist in this draft, I would tell you the best thing you could do is move back, take advantage of all the quarterbacks that feel like they're going to draft it early. Take advantage of that, because a good player is going to fall back, and you'll get, you know, you can get a great top-notch player at 12. But to move back in this draft, like a Pittsburgh Steelers at 20, who are chasing, they got to get offensive linemen. And there's some really good O-linemen in this draft. So move back to 20. See if you can grab a second-round pick on top of it. And then you have got to hit on those picks. Like every guy you go after has got to become a player, you know, a starter. So out of this draft, you need to find, unlike the 2018, 2019, 2020 drafts, where I think there's one dude left, and that's, you know, that's Courtland Sutton. You've got to find yourself in this draft like five contributors, but three starting dudes that are, and one of those starting dudes has to be a dude.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what you've got to be able to figure out.
And if you can accomplish that and you don't come away with your franchise quarterback, that's a really good first step to me. I think it's probably not going to be so exciting to the point where the fan base is going to be super fired up, but I think you should be, because doing it the way they've tried to do it, it hasn't worked either. And yeah, okay, I understand. You want them to go up into the top of the draft, get a quarterback. It's the best chance to turn your franchise around, but they're not there. You want them to give up more capital that they don't have to get there?
Yeah.
Seems like you're just trying to take another shortcut in the start of what is a rebuild. There's no retooling that over there at Dove Valley to me, at least not in finding success. Not while Patrick Mahomes still has a pulse.
Sure.
So I think that's a really good point. Again, we talked about cornerstones. We talked about young, cost-controlled contracts
right. That
can be impact players. You come away with, what you say, three starters, one dude, and five guys who contribute.
Yeah.
That's a damn good year in the draft.
Right.
So, yeah, I agree with you. More of your reaction on the RamosLaw.com text line. Some people have some other suggestions about what is it, a total solar eclipse, or is it a lunar eclipse?
This was, we're solar eclipsing today.
You sure?
Yes.
Oh, 60%. Here we go again. It's the fan.
With an advanced network, cybersecurity solutions, and trusted partnership, Comcast Business powers more businesses than anyone. Comcast Business, powering possibilities.
Get started with internet and security for your small business for $49.99 a month for 12 months with a 2-year contract. Plus, ask how to get up to an $800 prepaid card with qualifying internet. Call today. Ends 5/5/24. Restrictions apply. New customers only with 50 megabits per second internet and security edge. Eco bill and auto pay required. Equipment, taxes, and fees extra.
It's Schlereth and Evans on Denver's Sports Station. 104.3 The Fan.
It is time to light the lamp. Brought to you by Papa Murphy's. Last night, the Avalanche, 7-4 they lost, Mark, to Dallas. And it feels like that's all she wrote for the division now. Dallas at 107 points.
Sure.
The Avs at 102. And just the Avs have the toughest schedule left in the West, unless Dallas, for some reason, reels off some sort of losing streak. The Avs are done for the number one spot in the division. So most likely, their first-round matchup is with Winnipeg. Now, all that remains to be seen is whether or not they open here as the 2 seed or in Winnipeg as the 3 seed. Last night, this was Jared Bednar on Colorado's performance and making it just too easy on Dallas to get what they wanted.
I like that we didn't go away. I like that we kept fighting after giving up the 3 shorthand or power play goals. I think you're going to look at it 5-on-5. We did a lot of really good things. Just the bottom line is, like, we had to go earn everything we got, and there's too much there that I didn't feel like they had to earn that we gave them. I didn't hate our team game overall. It's got to be better in the defensive side of it especially, but I liked what Gorgie did tonight.
Okay. Well, let's just look at Alexander Georgiev's recent form, okay? And yes, there is slowly kind of a grassroots push for somewhat of a, at least a discussion about, is Alexander Georgiev the one that gives your team the best chance to win? I wouldn't say it's a full-blown goalie controversy, but no. I'd say we've entered the territory now at a really bad time of the year to be discussing this. But look at what Georgiev has done in his last 5 starts. He started that game against Pittsburgh. He allowed 4 goals before the Avs made that furious comeback to beat Pittsburgh at home. And then the next start was against New York. He was really good against New York. Got beat in the shutout, but I thought was excellent. Made 25 saves in that game. Only allowed 2 goals. The next one, that's when things started to get a little shaky. That game against Nashville, he allows 4 goals. Bedzy pulls him after he flips a puck out and over the glass for the unsportsmanlike penalty.
Right.
Then Ahonen comes in and is perfect, earns 3rd star of the game in relief. Then against Edmonton, 6. Then last night against Dallas, allowed 6. So in 4 of the last 5, you've allowed more than 4 goals.
Yeah.
Is it time to have that discussion?
Well, listen, they seem to have developed some confidence in Ahonen. And remember, going back 2 years ago, there was a big push, like, is Frankie better?
Mm-hmm.
Is Frankie better for us playoff time? And for a while, he was the one getting the starts until he had the one game, I can't remember who it was against, where he gave up some goals, and then they went back to Darcy Kuemper. But he had 2 or 3 starts in a row, if I remember correctly, in playoff time.
He was 6-0 in the playoffs.
Right.
He was 6-0. I mean, that as good of a of a performance from a 1B or a, you know, second goalie that you could possibly have on the way to a cup.
Right.
And maybe that's jaded us a little bit because we think it's necessary to. The truth is that if Alexander Georgiev doesn't play at a high level, the Avs probably won't make it out of the first round. Winnipeg hasn't been in great form as well lately, but make no mistake, you're going up against a Winnipeg team. First of all, they've had your number this year. Winnipeg has handled the Avs every time the Avs matched up with the Jets this season. That's a problem. Winnipeg probably has the Vezina winner, best goalie in the league, in Connor Hellebuyck. That's a problem. They've got a dynamic offense. They made themselves some moves at the deadline. Make no mistake, the first round matchup with the Winnipeg Jets, whether you start here or there, is going to be hard. It's going to be hard.
Right.
And if your coach is talking like this in a week and a half, the Avs have problems.
I thought he was great tonight. I did. I mean, you can't fault him on any of the goals. I think the probably one that he liked back was the one that squeaked through him on the quick slip to the middle in the power play. But, I mean, he was good. I mean, we just, the quality, well, and quantity, like the defending breakdowns that we had, we did some dumb stuff today.
You don't want to be talking about this time of year doing some dumb stuff, though I do want to pose this question to you. Based upon what we saw from the Nuggets as they entered the playoffs last year, they basically had the Western Conference locked up after they beat Memphis, you know, the Shotgun Willies game, right? They coasted into the finish. The year before that, when the Avs won the Cup, they basically shut her down for about 7-8 games before playoffs. They had like a 6-game losing streak before playoffs.
Right.
Do we take anything from, all right, well, maybe it just doesn't matter what form you're playing in, you know, heading into the playoffs. Because if we look back at the Avs last year, conversely, they were buzzing into the playoffs. They made a hard push to go get the division. So now, you're maybe not as in as good a form. You don't really have your full complement because Rantanen right now is out with a concussion. Miles Wood is day-to-day with a lower body. How do you feel about it? Is there anything that we kind of juxtapose based upon the last few years?
I don't. Like, I just go by my own experience. I think a lot of it has to do with how confident you are as a squad. Do you have questions? Or can you look at, you know, a loss here at this time of the year and just go, we're okay with that? Because, you know, yeah, we're trying to win them all, but we know what the ultimate goal is, and we know how good we are. Like, if you don't really have questions about your team, and you know you're just trying to get through the end of the season here to get to the playoffs, and you don't really have questions, you want to stay sharp when you're in there, and you want to play well for a period. But do you really feel like, I don't know, do you feel like I have to do it for four quarters or three periods, and we've got to, you know, like, I don't think you want to grind to the point where you exhaust yourself either. That, like, this is tricky territory. And the NFL oftentimes is a little different because, you know, every game matters. There's only 17 of them. And oftentimes you're rolling right into the playoffs for seeding. And you're rolling right into the, you know, last couple of games of the season for who wins the division. Because that's how it's kind of it plays out. It's a little different than, you know, than sometimes in the NBA or NHL. But I think it depends on each individual team, how confident you guys are in what you're doing. I think the Nuggets have a lot of confidence rolling into the playoffs that they can put their starting five on the court if they're healthy and they can beat anybody in the NBA. I'm not so sure the Avs have the exact same confidence.
I'm glad you got there. You want to know how I really feel about it? I feel that way. I feel that way. I think that when you were talking about a team at the deadline who needed to go out and make all these moves, it was a team that was a ways away from being a legit contender. As it stood before they made all those trades, they weren't making a cup run. Mm-hmm. No way. Not with the dead weight of Johansson in the lineup. Excuse me. And then you traded for Mittelstadt and Sean Walker. Casey Mittelstadt, a bit of a younger guy. I mean, he's a good player. But I wouldn't say he's a game breaker or a game changer. He's only 24. Maybe he eventually grows into it. But his skating isn't isn't elite enough to where I think that he's driving offense at a crazy clip every night, but he's a much better offensive player, certainly, than Ryan Johansson was. So at least you have the opportunity to have a second line that could potentially be another threat. But as this texter points out, and I think this texter is absolutely valid, the cup year, the Avs could roll four lines that could hurt you. This team is 2.5 lines with the same type of goalie, Greg. I think it's pretty spot on, Greg.
I think that's really good. By the way, like, even as you watched the broadcast last night, the one thing they kept pointing to on the broadcast was the depth that Dallas has, that all four lines for Dallas is productive.
Yeah.
They're all productive. And I think the texter brings out a great point. We've got 2.5 lines.
I agree.
Yeah.
You got a top line, and you've got enough players where even if you're missing a Nichushkin or a Rantanen, Drouin has been great. I mean, a couple of clicks for Jonathan Drouin, who's been outstanding lately. So that helps. But second line, I watched Nichushkin on that second line with Mittelstadt. They weren't very dangerous last night. Val, it seemed to me, has to do too much of the work that is required to even drive the offense on the second line when he plays there to have that line be a threat at all. So now he's trying to be defensively responsible, even more responsible on the forecheck, whereas I think maybe with, you know, MacKinnon and Rantanen sometimes, he maybe has a little bit more freedom. Yeah, you want him to do that greasy work so he can set up Mikko and Nate, but at the same time, Val himself can be that third threat that now a team can't lock in on him on the second line because he's a part of something bigger.
Right.
Whereas on the second line, I don't know. So, yeah, I've got real concerns about how far that this team can go. And I think we're seeing a team that made all those moves. They were far away at that point. You got some new blood in here with Mittelstadt and Walker and Duhaime and Trenin. And, you know, you even added Parise. And, okay, we got a little bit of a boost. They reeled off like a, what is a 6-7 game win streak at one point there. Yeah. And now, you know, you kind of reverted back to who you were, because maybe in hindsight, it was a long shot to try and get that many new guys to gel together all at once anyway.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll see. I felt like during that win streak, we were all sitting here going, man, well, they put it together, man. This was great moves at the deadline.
They're definitely better than they were.
Yeah,
yeah, I'm not going to argue that. And certainly when you're missing Mikko Rantanen, that's going to significantly affect things. Let's not get it twisted.
Right.
But are they good enough? And I think that remains to be seen. We'll address that more here coming up. On the other side, what's trending? Should the Rockies just fire Ozzie Guillen? Or should the Rockies just fire Bud Black and hire Ozzie Guillen? Ozzie makes his case next.
Here's Schlereth and Evans with What's Trending right now.
Mass Smith in for Mike Evans. Mike back tomorrow. What is trending first up? I don't know. I mean, a little fire in the whole time for the Rockies. What do you think? I know you're friends with Bud Black, but I mean, things, how much can a manager in baseball really do? But Ozzie Guillen.
Yeah, listen, if Bud Black went to the Dodgers, they still win 100 games. Like, it's.
Do they?
Yes.
Okay.
They do, because they're that talented.
They're that talented. They're the Dodgers.
Baseball is a lot about talent. But go ahead. What did Ozzie say?
I don't know. I think this.
Love my guy Ozzie, by the way. Ozzie is. I've worked with him at ESPN for a little while. Ozzie's a piece of work now.
He's a character.
Oh, my gosh.
I think this mentality might benefit the Rockies. You tell me.
It seems like the same way. You mean, like,
running the bases.
Running the bases. Everything is about legs. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like I always say, John Kruk say, fat, never pull.
You can't pull fat.
Nope. All those, eat right, be careful what you eat, no cheeseburger, here's the print. Nah, man. I remember those guys go here drinking 6, 7, 12 Budweiser, give me 3 hamburgers and go get it, boys.
Didn't go on the injured list.
And they play all year long.
Yeah.
Just a little old school baseball.
That's right.
Wash down a couple of dogs with a couple of Miller High Lifes.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, doubleheader.
Yeah.
That's how it used to be back in my day.
And those guys don't get hurt.
Just saying, Chris Bryant.
They got enough grease in their system.
Chris Bryant already dealing with the stiff back. Maybe it's time to throw out the quinoa and the gluten-free pasta. And maybe it's time to get on the ballpark diet.
Yeah.
Peanuts.
No cap.
Cracker Jacks. Dogs. How do you, where do you sit on the ballpark's I feel like baseball does it more than anybody. Mishmashing like five different food groups together and serving it on a burger.
No, I just...
Diabetes.
Yeah, I don't...
Like, what is it about the ballpark where they think that we want more food and more types of food in one delivery system in, like, a hot dog bun than, first of all, you'd be able to get anywhere else, not to mention it's also twice the quantity of anything you get anywhere else. I'm not interested in the two-foot-long dog with, you know...
Eight...
Donuts and ice cream on top of it, because that's what they're selling now.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not down with that either. Too many, just too a hodgepodge of all kinds of different stuff that doesn't make sense to me.
I do think Chris Bryant could, you know, maybe take a little bit. Look, whatever he's doing right now ain't working.
Little grease in your system is never a bad thing. That's what I say. A
little cheeseburger and Budweiser. Mm-hmm. I mean, fix you right up.
That's the only way you can play.
I don't know if you heard Coach Prime, but he's giving it to everybody, and it's not just the players.
Chang guys, come here. Do y'all have PlayStations at home? Do y'all play PlayStations?
Yes, sir.
So you know down and distance and stuff.
Yes,
but
sir.
Why you ain't doing your darn job?
Well, I don't know if you heard. Well, that was, first of all, that was Prime getting after the Chang gang. You should have seen the look on these kids' faces. Mm-hmm. You think Deion put the fear of God in those kids' eyes?
Yeah, I think Deion's got a little bit of, I mean, he's a nice guy, but he's got a little bark to him, right? He's got a little spiciness to him, so I like that.
I guarantee you one thing. Those kids that were running the Chang gang, they haven't screwed up since that moment.
Yeah, they're on it now.
They're on top of it. We were talking a little bit earlier that the night before the CU spring game, CU's going to have a talent show.
Uh-huh.
Somebody says, Mark, you should demonstrate your hidden talent as busting out your wrestling moves on Matt.
Oh.
You got
no.
in trouble with that.
Yeah.
I mean, you've already injured one former employee. I mean,
right.
You don't need to make it another.
No, exactly. Well, you're not a former.
Well,
so
could be.
yeah, we don't need to... Plus, I hurt myself doing that.
Did you?
Yeah. Hurt my hip and my wrist doing that.
That might have been...
I didn't run to the hospital and get x-rays and all kinds of stuff. I just gutted it up. Unlike some people. They know who I'm talking about.
You're saying you're manned up, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Got a little bit more hair on your peach. Is that what you're trying to say?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. Coming up. We go to our resident astrology major, Mark Schlereth, for the breakdown on today's partial total lunar solar eclipse.
Right. Actually, I got some good info on that.
Please.
So, okay, here it is. So, when the Earth is between the sun and the moon,
okay,
that is a lunar eclipse. So, when the Earth or the moon is between the Earth and the sun, that would be a solar eclipse. And then... if something crazy happens, like the sun is between the Earth and the moon, that's apocalypse. That's with it. Because you're in trouble then. The moon gets that far away and the sun collides into the Earth. Then we're all dead.
Walk me right down into that one.
Yeah, right?
Walk me right down into that one. Mm-hmm. Hey, fellas, a solar eclipse is when Mike Evans' huge head crosses by the sun in front of the windows in the studio every morning.
We do have a solar eclipse in here every single morning with Mike's head. That is a great point.
Is that where he is today? He's the eclipse.
Yeah, he is the solar eclipse. He's just traveling around the country blocking out the sun.
Somebody else. Schlereth's talent show song, I Can't Dance by Genesis.
Yeah.
Could you pull that one off?
I can't sing either, so...
If you had to, one song in a talent show you had to perform.
Oh.
And it had to be decent. Otherwise, you know, negative repercussions.
Vandal fight song. I come up with that.
Man, I don't know.
A real song.
I think you're getting booed. I mean, there's celebrity judges at this thing. It's America's Got Talent, the spring game.
Dude, I have no...
There's no song.
There is no song. I can't say I don't have any rhythm or any talent at all.
Come on,
Zero.
Guys.
That's not true. You're an incredible singer.
Yeah.
What song would you like him to sing, Rogue?
Any weird, strange, alternative 80s song.
Oh, like throw out some Cure or something.
Sure, you could do that.
Sure.
I've seen you, you know, on Fridays with your rendition of Karma Chameleon.
Yeah, yeah.
You're adept. You're adept. There's no question. Hey, here's a question the texter brings up. It's about Caitlin Clark. How long is this Caitlin Clark story going to go on? Let's admit it. Once she gets to the WNBA, she won't amount to anything unless she puts up historic numbers.
Yeah, how much? That's the thing. I mean, you know, first off, I believe the WNBA is still subsidized by the NBA. She'd actually, if she went back to college, which she could, apparently she's got another year of eligibility, she'd make a lot more money in NIL than she's going to make in the WNBA.
I don't know if it would be a lot. She'd make a good amount of money. I just think you'd probably, with all the endorsements she already has, I mean, she's got a State Farm commercial and a Gatorade commercial. And I think it's probably going to be just about comparable. Now, did you see this? I read the starting salary for the number one overall pick in the WNBA draft. Take a guess.
$230,000
How about you guys? You guys, Rogue?
The starting?
Starting pick? Salary for the number one overall draft pick in the WNBA.
80.
John?
I'll go 100.
And you said, what was it, 230?
Yeah, I just went off the highest paid players in WNBA are like making max out at like 240 or something like that.
Caitlin Clark expected to be the first overall pick in next month's 2024 WNBA draft. Uh-huh. In her first year, her base salary, approximately $76,000.
Yeah, let's just...
You curious what the bonus is for the WNBA Rookie of the Year?
Rookie of the Year? Sure, go ahead, lay it on me.
$5,000.
$5,000?
$5,000.
I was going to say 50.
Five. So... if she wins Rookie of the Year, we're talking like $81,000. Compared to your point, she's making, you mean she's the number one NIL earner right now. Mm-hmm. So conventional wisdom would be that if she were to go back to school, she would make more money.
She does have, like you said, she does have a bunch of endorsements that I don't think are going away.
No. She's probably going to get more.
She'd probably have a chance to get more if she went back to school. Because she's going to get a lot more numbers ratings-wise. The WNBA doesn't rate. She went back to school, a lot more eyeballs on her in Iowa, wouldn't it?
Whoever's running the board, the next time Mark tries to talk about the eclipse, please use the Sandy Clough drop.
Shut up!
I think that's probably right. Accurate.
Shut up!
I think we've confused everybody about the eclipse enough for today. Although, you never know, we could more on the other side. Matt Smith in for Mike Evans alongside Mark Schler.
You're listening to Schlereth and Evans on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Oh, this is a good one. I like this one. Do we have to be stuck with know-it-all Matt every Monday? Shoot.
It's just been one Monday.
Know-it-all. Did you guys happen to miss our conversation about the solar eclipse? I don't know how much of a know-it-all I'd call myself in that one. No kidding. Hey, there's a few things I do want to get to on the Ramoslaw.com text line. Somebody says, Clark is making $8 million in NIL money. Mark is right. Stay in school. You know, I've heard this conversation. Look, if Caitlin goes to the WNBA, she's not going to make enough money. But there are people who cover women's college basketball who are much more adverse or adept at it in it than I am. That'll tell you that it'll be negligible, and with endorsements, she'll probably make more. It's a constant topic of conversation. So, I don't begin to pretend to tell you what her endorsements will look like in the WNBA. I just know that it's probably going to be about negligible, especially because, think about it, most of these brands are going to want to strike when the iron is hot. So they'll, at a minimum, probably give her a shot, wouldn't you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think endorsement-wise, at least for this year, she'll have big-time endorsement. Then it just depends on how she continues to play in the WNBA and what kind of impact she has. Obviously, women's college basketball, with her, the last 2 years has been, you know, it's been something that people have gotten excited about, and especially come tournament time, they've been very excited about it. Does that continue? Does women's college basketball continue to have that kind of hype and that kind of, you know, visibility? And I would tell you, no, because after Caitlin Clark, who else, honestly, do you know? I mean, that's not going to the WNBA draft this year. Who do you know? Does anybody on South Carolina have the kind of staying power that's going to say, oh, yeah, I got to tune in and watch South Carolina play basketball? Because the face of South Carolina to me is Dawn Staley.
For sure. I mean, there's no argument there. 109-3 in the last three seasons.
Right. And you can and the casual fan like me, there's not one person you can name on that squad other than Dawn Staley.
Probably not. Probably not. The only one that I would even mention would be Juju Watkins. She's like got next. You know, there's a couple of girls in that South Carolina team that I think could be pretty good, but, you know, by nature of just how loaded they are, they kind of get overshadowed by one another in the strength of the team. So, yeah, I hear your point there. And Paige Beckers is coming back, don't forget.
Yeah.
So, you know, her and Juju Watkins, they'll definitely be leading the next generation. But to Texter's point, I mean, maybe it goes away. Maybe it does. I don't know. You know what's not going away? That's the Denver Nuggets, Mark.
Oh,
Denver
Nuggets. I thought you were going to say the Rockies.
Well... Can we get to them? You know what? How about we get to them next segment?
Yeah,
can we do that next segment?
Right.
Let's talk about the Rockies next segment. The one thing I want to talk about real quick is Jamal Murray. And in doing so, I want to tell you, it's time to hit the hardwood brought to you by Papa Murphy's, okay?
Okay.
Jamal Murray comes back, 16 points in 21 minutes. How much Jamal do you want to see down the stretch? Or would you like to see him in every game here just with that minutes restriction?
Yeah, I would like to see him down the stretch. You know, if he misses a game, what do they have, four left?
They got four left. They're in Utah tomorrow night.
Uh-huh.
Wednesday, they've got Minnesota. Then they're at San Antonio and at Memphis to end the year.
I would like to see him get his 20 minutes a night or so. Now, if he misses one game, that's not going to concern me. But I'd like to see him over the next four games get about 20, like on the minutes restriction.
Mm-hmm.
And just keep him fresh, but keep him fresh while knocking off the rust. I don't know if that's that feels like the right thing to me. That feels like it makes sense.
Yeah, get into a rhythm, but we're not going to overdo it here.
Yeah.
Now, Wednesday against Minnesota might be a bit of a different story.
Right.
Because if you believe Jamal Murray, which we all do, he said after the game the other night that, you know, of course the one seed matters.
Right.
It's home court advantage in the playoffs. Of course it matters. And for the Nuggets, who are 30-2 when scoring 110 or more points at home, you better believe it matters. So I do think that they're going to make that push. Jokic will win his third MVP. Out of curiosity, where do we sit right now as far as all-time Denver athletes for Nikola? Pre-second ring, if they get one this year, assuming one ring, a finals MVP, and... you know, three individual MVPs.
You'd have to put him. I mean, you got to go Elway 1, mm-hmm. Manning 2.
Really?
Nikola 3.
You putting Peyton above Nikola still?
It's Peyton freaking Manning, yeah.
No, I get it.
Yeah.
But he didn't win three MVPs in Denver.
No, but those 2012-13.
I know.
Those years were unreal.
Glory days. I remember.
Yeah.
Two Super Bowl appearances.
Two.
So what can Jokic do to eclipse that then, out of curiosity?
Well, if he wins the MVP again this year, again, it goes to the popularity. You had the thing on popularity, like the Broncos were still...
Yeah, yeah. The second place as far as fan support here in the city.
Right.
Avalanche were first, Rockies were third somehow, and then the Nuggets were fourth.
Yeah, and I don't know exactly how that, you know, the number of fans, obviously there are more Bronco fans than any other.
Yeah.
But let's just face it, if the Broncos win, there's essentially no other show in town. Everybody else is second fiddle. Right? If the Broncos are winning.
I would think so.
Yeah.
That's at least how it had been.
Or how it has been.
Yeah. I mean, but at the same time, they haven't ever coincided with both of the other franchises. I guess maybe you guys did. You guys did with the Avs around the turn of the century.
And yeah, they were good.
All those years ago.
In 2000. But I will tell you, you talk about missed opportunities, you know, the TV deal, to me, is, and I know people tell you, well, you just got to switch, or you just got to stream, or you just got to whatever. But if you make it easy for fans, because you think about it, you've had 8 years here where the Broncos have been bad. And you've had the last 4 years or so where you've had this unbelievable run with Jokic, who's about to win his third in 4 years. And you haven't made it easy for the next generation of fans to jump on the bandwagon.
Well, that's true. And but I don't think that's Jokic's fault.
No, it's not Jokic's fault, but I'm saying how much more would Jokic trump up on that
if they had been able to watch them the last 5 years?
Yeah, if here's the thing, you know, like if you're in their 20s, you're going to find a way to watch.
This is true, yeah.
Right? But what I'm talking about is if you're my age and you have kids, now my kids are older, but people my age have kids that are 12, 13, 14.
Sure.
You know, or 9 or 10 if you're younger, or 7 or 8 like my granddaughters. If it's easy, it's on.
Right.
If it's easy, now you're cultivating 8 and 9-year olds that I got to have an abs jersey. I want, I want a stick. I want to, like, it just haven't made it easy.
Can I just stay up 10 more minutes and finish the game?
Right.
Yeah.
So it just is.
I don't know. I would wager that I think Nikola's getting closer to PFM than you'd think.
I agree with you.
But what he would have to do, I mean, one more championship has to do it. If they win this year, he takes over that spot. No?
Yeah.
Disagree or agree? Three MVPs and two championships.
Yeah.
I love Peyton as much as the next guy, but come on, that you can't argue with that. No?
Mm-hmm.
Or you think even still that's not enough?
I still think it'd be hard.
Wow.
For a Nugget to usurp
Peyton.
Peyton.
Even though he's a three, all right. Maybe you're right. I don't know. To me, it just seems like if we're just looking at resume side by side, as far as what you've done here, one significantly outweighs the other. It's no disrespect to Peyton.
Curious. No. But, yeah, what Nicole has done here has been insane. It's been insanely good, which is cool. I mean, I'm telling you, it's been fun to watch. There's no question about that, man. I've enjoyed the heck out of it. I think everybody has, really.
I hope it continues for a little while longer.
Right.
I do, and I'd be surprised if Nikola wins another that he isn't up there with the rest of them.
Yeah,
with John, with Joe, over Peyton. My two cents. All right, of course, that is Papa Murphy's, home of Take and Bake Tuesdays and $5 Fridays. A few other things I want to mention on the way out. The men's national championship game is tonight, Purdue and UConn. 6.5-point game, 6.5-point line. UConn is the favorite here. Donovan Klingon and Zach Edey. What does it say about Dan Hurley and what he's done at that program if they're able to repeat as national champion in a sport that hasn't seen a repeat champion since 07, 08?
I mean, it just goes to show you how great he has been. And again, it comes to cultivating your program, cultivating the culture of your program, the way you play together. It's amazing. You look at Storrs, Connecticut, and I'm intimately familiar with where it is, that you can build such a national powerhouse in a little area like that. The Connecticut could become kind of the epicenter of basketball and NCAA basketball. It's amazing. So good for him. Should be a great game tonight. Really room for Purdue. I am.
I have to tell you. And yeah, you're rooting for Purdue because you've got them in the bracket.
Right.
So if Purdue wins, you win our bracket challenge among the staff.
Uh-huh.
And if UConn wins, Mace wins.
Correct.
All right, so you will be rooting for the Boilermakers tonight, hard then.
No question about it.
All right, that's a 7:20 first
tip. I'm probably more rooting against Mace than I am for the Boilermakers.
Move this!
Because Mace and I have beef. We have beef. I'm down on Mace right now.
Why is that?
Hit piece, man.
Hit piece?
Hit piece.
Smear campaign hit job.
Yep, he went with smear campaign on me.
Slander.
So, yeah, absolutely.
That's so good. That's so good. I got to read a text. I can't believe this is a text. This is from a 303 area code. Joke the choke is 500 without Murray. He's a liability on defense. Open your eyes. He's not that great.
Wow.
Would that man just a little bit.
Did that come from Gilbert Arenas? Does he have a burner phone with a 303 area code?
Is that Stokes sticking up for his guy, you know, PFM? I guess we'll find out next. Dover and Stokely, they're in. Matt and Mark, we're out.